Welcome, everybody, to another episode of A Metal Freedom. I'm your host, Jay Hill. Tonight, we have a really, you know, another guest, or a guest, I should say, that we had about a month and a half ago. And I was going to have him on sooner, about a week ago. But when I went on a trip, I went on a vacation or an investigation for a paranormal with my paranormal team. And on the way back, my monitor took a beating. I guess I didn't pack it very well. So I kind of cracked the crap out of it. So I ended up having to wait to get another monitor. And I just set this one up. Excuse me. And it's decent. It's nice. I got a good deal on it. And I really like it. So I'm happy about that. I do have some up-and-coming paranormal shows to look out for, Paranormal Memoirs and Paranormal Saloon. So, look for those on Encompass Media on YouTube. You can find us all on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, iHeartRadio, Apple, whatnot. So, but tonight's guest really doesn't need an introduction because he's a fantastic drummer. He's a good friend, and I love talking with him. And so we decided to continue this conversation, part two. So let's get Jason Mooney on. What's up, brother?
Good evening, sir. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I can. Yeah. So how's it going, man?
Busy, 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 you know?
Yeah.
We got this, like I was saying earlier before, we got this Metal Fest going on, and Saturday is was dancing all over the place, but we got so many RSVPs already. It's going to be sold out. And Sunday, I gave a friend of mine in a band that wants to run that day so we can take the heat off of me for a bit. And then, like I said, in September, we're coming up to Georgia and doing two shows. And then after that, up to Tennessee to film the first video for the band. And, we had a vote on where we wanted it to be for location and what it to look like, and we're going to shoot it in the Appalachian Mountains, and I can't think of a better place to do it than there, at least from our point of view, and for what kind of lifestyle.
Now, you guys have an album coming out?
The album's done, but what had happened was we've turned down five labels already because they wanted so much money for us to pay them.
Right.
And so since we hit the brakes on that, we just kept writing, so we didn't want to be at a standstill, but we didn't want to keep doing more shows with the album not being released worldwide, because it's all about distribution. So it's a web, it's crazy, it's almost like saying, I remember saying to my first record company, the old saying, you have to invest money to make money. And a big misconception with musicians are is that they're very, very wealthy,
Right.
And just because we have 50K in gear and a bus and clothing endorsements and all that stuff does not mean we're wealthy people. You still have to finance things on the road and promote your product, but people have to be able to hear your product around the world before you get there. So when it comes down to money, you have a sit down or a pile with the guys and go, do you want to pay this label this much money? Because in the world I had come from, and I do realize things have changed, and I hate to sound like I'm 100 years old, but a record company always gave me or us an advance to record the album before they'd release it. Then you get a touring agency, and then put your assemble your crew, your road manager, and et cetera, and roadies, and sound man, lighting guy, and whatever. Now it's kind of backwards in that way. You know what I mean? It's almost like you feel like, by asking for an advance to get an album done, and I know how quick we can get one done with today's technology, it doesn't take that much. And in the last interview, I think I had said to you, my singer is a producer and an engineer and has a studio in his home. So that's where the album was done. So we didn't need the recording studio. And
that's a plus.
Yeah, we had the gear picked up we wanted to use, the sounds, copywriting the name, the lyrics, all that stuff. Just doing stuff that normally it would take a team of people to do, but we just took it head on. So what it just comes down to is releasing the album now. And I might add, the artwork's getting done for the front of the album cover. and nobody wanted AI. Nobody. They wanted it painted. I'm talking Picasso style, you know, Michelangelo type stuff.
Right. That's kind of an old art form right there. You know what I mean? Now everything is AI, and there's so many different bands that use it. And I actually use some of it for my posters, but I try to limit a little bit of what I do just because I can take different pictures and piece them together. But
I get it.
But yeah, I mean, but you know what? Talking a little bit about your music and the band itself, do you have like a set list or set, you know, when you've done shows, I'm assuming already. So
a lot.
Do you have like a set list that, or do you change your lists, or do you just kind of keep it similar?
It kind of stays verbatim, because what we'll do at rehearsal is we already know what the set list is going to be for the shows. And then we like to do something called a dress rehearsal, because of the fact that we're not just going up there in swim trunks. We're wearing full leather and wristbands and headpieces and earpieces. Right. So the room's got to feel like stage. So sometimes in the rehearsal room here, we don't even run fans, which is no big surprise on stage how you feel either. There's not always adequate airflow. Mm-hmm. And especially, I don't know if you've ever worn leather on stage or known that anyone that has, especially a drummer. You will lose 8 pounds that night.
I can only imagine, man. I personally have never worn leather pants. I'm kind of glad I never have, but I've known a few people who have done that. And you are correct. I mean,
you want to hear something funny? You're all dressed up like that. Your cardio is already cranking like a racehorse, and with minimal airflow. I mean, you're pacing yourself, and you're trying to stay hydrated and whatnot. And just for the sake of conversation, I remember doing a show years ago at the Green Bay Civic Auditorium, and the stage setup is like the floor where people could stand, and you have seats, and then you have your upper balcony seating, right? At the end of the set, I was breathing so hard, and it was such minimal airflow. I looked up towards the balconies. It was, you know, the last note that you hit, last song of the night. This guy's, you know, throwing his hands. He wants drumsticks, right? So I'm looking up there, and I'm like, I'm wondering if I can make it that far with the sticks to hit him, and he can catch them, right? But I'm huffing and puffing, and I'm breathing so hard. Your heart's still cranking after the last note. So I come up, and I go to loft it like I'm, you know, throwing a bomb like a quarterback. And when I reached forward like this, I took a deep breath because I was out of air. And my lung pinched in my rib cages. I don't know if you've ever felt that. It feels like a butcher knife going through. So it went through, and I fell over the four toms on my back. Kind of a
holy crap.
Spinal Tap style, right? He came afterwards, and he goes, "I caught him, man! I caught him!" I'm like, "Nice job, I'm looking for away."
So right, you know, in the wake of a lot of stuff has happened in the music world, I have to ask you, because you're a musician and you've known and played with a lot of different known musicians, do you have any a couple quick Ozzy stories?
Not with Oz. I've got one with Zach and one with Randy Castile, who unfortunately left us because of stomach cancer. The one with Randy is pretty short. He used to hang out at a bowling alley in San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles and hang out in the bar area. And I was talking to him about click tracks because I hate click tracks, and I always will. I believe it's a drummer playing to another drummer. I know why they use it. It doesn't mean I have to like them. So we were sitting in the bar one day. I go, so what do you do, man? You know, because he's not doing super fast up, but he's a powerful drummer. He's got great meter, and he's right in the bucket. And I think he did Ultimate Sin and the other album with Crazy Babies, the other album with No More Tears. I can't remember what they were. A great drummer. He says, and he goes, I just grab a Corona and light some incense and relax. He goes, the first thing you can do with a click is overthink it. You know what I mean? It's there. It's like the human heartbeat of the earth. And if you know what the tempo is, you're focusing so much on it, it'll actually screw you up. like a lot of fast bands I know that cruise, right, you know, where it's like coming off the tracks, they have to kill the click because it's just cruising so damn fast and then breaking down to this sludgy slow part where it's like, whoa, you know? I mean, for that style of music anyways, you know, if you're doing like a Bonham thing or like a crew thing that's 4-4 half time, right, after a while you just get it and it just becomes normal. It just stays in your brain, you know? I just don't want the annoying noise in my ear. That's the only thing that bothers me about it. But that was my Randy story. And unfortunately, he had like a pimple on his stomach. And it grew to the size of a nickel and then a quarter. And it was a stomach cancer. And if I remember correctly, you know, the doctors had cut him open. And he was fine. And then it came back. And drummers, a lot of people don't know that.
Oh, wow.
But a main muscle drummers use is their stomach. So when you have their stomach surgery, I mean, right, you know, so, and I think that's when Samantha from Hole came in for the drums. And Randy had already left crew. I'm sorry, Ozzy for crew. But anyways, I mean, he's missed, man. I mean, I really looked up to him. He played with Lita Ford, the Motels. I mean, just a phenomenal all-around drummer. Great, great guy, too. But that's my Ozzy Randy Castile story. The Zach story is just a funny one. He was playing in his band called Pride and Glory, and they had this trailer. It looked like it was out of Louisiana, out of the bayou, like it was cut in half, and they had like bar stools set up with like these white, you know, candles and Christmas tree lights. It looked kind of voodoo-ish, you know? And there weren't that many people there, and the set got done. And I'm talking to him. He's leaning on his rig outside at this outdoor fest, you know. And he takes his hat off. He had sort of like derby hat he wore. And that's his thing, you know. And he sets it on his rig. And he's like, and you were saying, Mooney, say again, you know, we're talking, right? All of a sudden, here comes some kid barreling through, grabs his hat, and beelines out of it, right? And at the time, and Zach won't probably won't remember this because he meets so many people. Zach goes, Mooney, hold my beer. And I don't know if you know Zach, he was all cut up and in shape. He moved like a linebacker,
right,
after this guy threw people, okay? Flies back over to me, takes his hat off, puts his hat on, and he goes, I got my hat back. You were saying? I'm like, wow, impressive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He seems like a cool guy,
really cool,
you know?
Really cool.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and there's, you know, different musicians, I mean, going through different sets and different, you know, shows. And was there ever a show that you went to that you just, because you wanted to see the band, that you just wanted to be
like
there?
Around the people? I said in an interview, I was doing an interview in Fort Texas. I said to the guy interviewing me, I go, the people that you see out here tonight in the this packed place, right, are all totally cool, and you don't see them out in like mainstream society. I don't see them at the supermarket. I don't see them like sometimes out fishing or whatever. You only see them there, and they're the most coolest, normalest people that like get blacklisted, like the black sheep, and are probably a bit
right
frowned upon, you know, like what are you, where do you come from, or maybe judged, you know. And they're the coolest people in the world. And at the end of the night, if you're playing, just like in high school, you're sitting on the back tailgate of a pickup truck, shooting the shit, talking about whatever.
Right.
She did this to me. She did that to me.
Right.
She took the house. She took the car. She's gone.
Right.
I came home
and
the power was off.
Right.
I'm heading back out on the road in a month, though. Where are you going to be? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like, you know, you from some of the stories that you've told me, you've had quite a bit of a run on certain things in your life that you've kind of gone to have the ups and downs, but it seems like that you're in a good place.
I am, because I had to come to the terms with, if shit in life's going to happen, it's going to happen. It's how you deal with it, you know? And it's not always about win or lose. There's a journey in there, and if you didn't want to do it anymore, none of us have to do it. And I've had this discussion with the band a couple days ago. I go, any one of us can just walk out of here and do another band go to a different city or a state, mm-hmm. never play again. There's no pressure.
Right.
But it gets to the point where when you really don't like what you're doing anymore, everything just becomes a headache, or it takes you a lot of energy to come to band practice and go, oh, I got to go back here again. I got to see him again. Don't keep right. it going, because it's just going to get worse. And then what's going to happen is you're going to be in a tube called a bus going on the road, and you're going to have friction. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I know that there's a lot of bands out there over the years that they eventually get to that point, and all of a sudden it's just like you said, oh, I got to see this guy again, or I got to do this song again, or I got, you know what I mean? When you're in that, just like any other job that you, a regular job, you know, when you're at that point, switch, change out, you know, change up your job, do something, you know, you got to always follow what makes you happy. And I'm a firm believer.
I had to break up a fight on a tour bus in Europe, and I'm not going to say any names. It was a sound guy and the road manager. And they were best friends
okay.
from New Jersey since like high school. And I knew stuff was uh-huh. getting to them, and they started name calling, right? Kind of like when you're in grade
school. Right.
Well, you're this and that. Oh, yeah, I am. Well, you're this and that. You're this and that. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know? So you have these bunks in the mm-hmm. bus, and there were like curtains in between the bunks dividing from the front and the back of the bus. And they start going full
yeah.
blows. I'm talking like a boxing match, you know? So I'm in the middle of them, pushing them both back. Trying to tell them, listen, you know, you guys are best friends since high school. Knock this shit off. And I'm like getting hit and stuff, you know. And finally they stop and they hug, okay? And they go, it's stress from the tour. It's a stress from the tour. I didn't mean what I said. I didn't mean what I said either. Okay, give me a kiss.
Right.
You know, some guy's got a black eye. The other guy's got a scratch here. And at the next day, everything's just fine, you know.
Did you ever have any of those moments yourself where you just couldn't do it anymore?
Not couldn't play the music anymore or whatever, but I had moments where mm-hmm. I questioned writing, because, you know, you have your catches and books and styles of music, whether you go heavy, light, whatever. Mm-hmm. Kind of music you're playing, when the writing starts taking a turn, it's kind of like almost like you want that first cherry rush, and the drummer only has so much power sometimes behind the writing, even though I'm a songwriter. But when I feel a little bit mm-hmm. eliminated from it a bit, you know, where I can't contribute as much, then it kind of makes me feel like walking away, you know, because then you kind of feel, I mean, I can't speak for anyone but myself, but other drummers will know what I'm talking about. You kind of feel like a machine. You know, like we're going to open the gate on the cage, go slam it, back in, you go and shut your mouth. And that's okay if you're a studio or a session drummer, because that's what they're paying you to do, is shut your mouth and be absolutely
right,
and whatever. I know the routine, I've done
right.
it before. You know, but as far as stopping mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. playing is concerned, the only time I did consider was when I became a father, and I took a year off. And I'm like, I wonder if I could just do this and never play him, right? And I was almost there. Right. I was going to be done. I think I had just turned 35, 36. And I'd been playing since I was 17. I've played all over the world with these bands and whatever. I'm not bragging. But I'm like, I could really do this and just be a dad the rest of my life. And then, like, things do happen. You know, and things headed south with the relationship and whatnot. And it was such a disaster that I went, well, one of these things, if you're going to go do this and that, you go be with who you want to be with and go to this house and jump on this bike or whatever, I'm going back on the road. So that's what mm-hmm. I do, is I rehearse at night in the garage, and then I would answer the phone in the morning, afternoon, or whatever. And I go, where am I flying to? What am I doing? I come in, I do 3-4 shows in a row, maybe go into a studio, knows, you know, and in the musician's world, they usually put you up at their house or get you a hotel room or whatever, you know. And since the full-time dad thing wasn't going to go, even though I was willing to do it, I went back into it, and I'll always be happy doing that. But that is the one time I did consider quitting, because as a father, at least for me, I had this feeling over me like, if I'm gone all the time, I can't protect anybody. I can't be there all the time.
Right.
And any father knows that feeling, you know. But I'm like, well, what do airline pilots do, you know? What do you do? You're in NASA and going into space, you know? It's just how it is. And for musicians, you might be out there. Like I said earlier, one of the bands that canceled for the Saturday Fest, they called me up and they go, we got to pull out. We're coming right from Europe to the airport to Tampa for the gig, and I want them on the bill so bad because they're so big and badass and great guys. They told me, because last second, they go, Europe wants to keep us another month. And I says, bro, you go do what you got to do. If Europe wanted to keep me for another month, 3 months, I'd do it. I mean, everybody's different, but I would rather wake up in a different city every day or a country than be home for 10 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. What's at home, you know?
Right.
That's it. Every time I'm just itching to go. We'll do the set list a couple times here, and I'll put my hand underneath my jaw like this on the four times because I'm back in kick-ass shape again. And they'll look at me, go, everything all right? And I'll go, yeah, just bored. I just wish we were playing with a pit in front of us and in rally right now or
right.
Chicago, you know. So that's where we're at on that. But like I said, the two Georgia shows are coming up, and this is going to be the first video I did with this band, not other bands. So now, you know, you go through notebooks and you're thinking about what's going to be in the back and this and that, you know, whether you're going to have fires lit or smoke or what kind of things you're going to put in there. Are you going to put horses in there that look medieval? Or are you going to have someone diving off a cliff that's going to commit suicide or whatever? It depends on what the subject matter is about the song, to tell you the truth, to follow some kind of, you know, screenplay on it, which is important.
Right.
You know, like I always loved the old school video of Alan and the guys from Ministry doing New World Order, because they actually filmed it in Skid Row and went there and did, which is a pretty nasty spot, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was getting other ideas.
All right, everybody.
I was watching an old NWA video for Straight Outta Compton.
Right.
And they use like this innuendo, like we're always walking through hell. Like there's hell around every block. And hell makes you think fire, flames, right? Well, at the beginning of the video, they're all walking together, the band, and their tennis shoes are on fire. Their basketball shoes. Like no matter where we're going, we're on fire, someone's trying to burn us down, you know?
Right.
So you beat them.
Right.
That type of, it's kind of like you're putting a script together, you know, for 3 minutes and 46 seconds.
Right. I used to watch videos, you know, when I was younger, you know, back in the 80s, had some great videos. Some of my favorite videos, like on MTV when they had like Headbangers Ball, was Testament. And
yeah.
They had other bands like even Metallica, but I mean, there was just other really Metal Church and, you know, bands like that. And those videos to me, Anthrax, they were iconic. You know what I mean? And when
you mentioned Testament, I don't think I've ever seen a bad video from Testament ever.
What? Oh my gosh, dude.
I've never seen a bad video that they've done. I've loved them all. And I like that one they did called Made of Blood that they did on the res. I thought
you said you never saw a video ever of them.
I've never seen
a bad video either.
Yeah, never. I mean look at like when they did a Practice What You Preach. That's them just throwing down, yeah. You know?
Right. And that album wasn't that super heavy, but it was heavy enough.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that didn't like The Ritual. I love The Ritual. I love that album. You know, I mean, and Souls of Black. I mean, they had those continuously coming, you know, and I just, yeah, I got to meet them once. You got to shake Chuck Billy's hand and
yeah,
it was cool. You know, I mean, but it was just.
Years ago, I opened up a lot for Testament years ago in Exodus, Nuclear Assault, Murphy's Dark Angel, DRI, stuff like that. I think Sabotage, things like that. But yeah, I mean, that era and that type of music, it seems like it stopped, but then it kind of resurged itself, you know?
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day, I'm like, I wonder how many people right now are out there over 14 years old seeing certain bands for the first time, like Pantera or Testament or whatever. It's like it was like kept in them, and they're like, what's this new thing, you know?
Right.
And right. there was
Dark Angel. They've got a new album coming out.
I seen that.
I can't wait for that. That was one of my first vinyl albums, was Dark Angel, Darkness Descends. Oh my gosh, that was awesome.
Yeah, we did a show with Dark Angel and Flotsam and Jetsam and Phoenix. It was fucking packed. And I actually picked up, because of that show, Dark Angel, Darkness Descends on vinyl. And I thought it was a slammer, man, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I even liked Hoagland on the Testament records. I thought he did a great job. And I loved it when Lombardo came in for the Gathering, too. I thought that was awesome. You know?
Mm-hmm. I liked the Flotsam and Jetsam, No Place for Disgrace?
Yeah.
Or even when the Quattro came out, I played it, wore it out. I liked it, but you know, that was early 90s. Things were changing.
Yeah.
So I was kind of trying to change with it, but I couldn't. I was stuck in listening to, you know, Fear of the Dark and, you know, Testament albums and
Slayer. Sometimes it's hard to adapt. Sometimes it's hard to
look
to anything new.
Yeah, it's really hard for me. I mean, it's really hard for me to try new stuff. I'm kind of a creature of habit.
Early brothers from Jackal, and I call them like a Southern AC/DC. I love Jackal to death. And one of the Warleys had said, no matter what happens with music or whatever, I find myself puts up in a system and cranking back and black. It's just so
timeless. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's like, I don't even want to know about anything else. I like what I like, you know?
Right. I've seen Jackal in concert twice. I've been trying to get the lead singer on my show. And yeah, some of my goals have been kind of lofty, and I understand that, but I still like to talk to these people. You know,
I've never talked to Jesse. I know he runs the band, and I love what he does on Full Throttle on A&E with the out in Sturgis.
Sure. Yeah.
But, 3 nights ago, I invited son Nigel Dupree and his band down to the Gorge shows if they're available. I invited them to come up and play a song, you know, because I don't know if you ever heard Jesse Sonny. He sounds just like him, and he's a kick-ass singer, his band kicks ass. And
right.
Georgia boys,
right,
so.
Right. Yeah. There's some good bands. Yeah. Remember Georgia Satellites?
I sure do.
I love those guys. Those guys.
I got called up on stage in Tennessee to do a song an hour outside of Nashville. And you know, it's like one of those spur of the moment things. I'm like, what are we doing? Yeah. What are we doing? And we're like, we're doing Keep Your Hands to Yourself by Georgia Satellites. I'm like, okay, I think I remember it. Let's go, 4 count. We did it perfect all the way through.
Yeah. You know? Right. It's songs like that that are, like I said, are kind of iconic. And then people, you come up with, you know, different, you know, just pull it out of your brain and say, how about that song? You know, or, you know what I mean? And it's just like, when you realize you're playing it, it's like, man, this is really fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're just kind of like, God, I remember this, you know? And I got a friend who plays drums, and he was in a Rat tribute band, or they were just doing covers or something like that. And he said he had a lot of fun. He was playing ELO songs and he was having fun. You know what I mean? So there's so many different bands out there that I can't just pick, you know, that mainstream or that line of metal or whatever, because there's so much different good rock music, you know.
There's great country music out there that people don't know about. I got a phone call yesterday from a friend of mine, and he puts me on speakerphone at the show, and he goes, hey, one of your idol's grandkids wants to say hello. I'm like, who the hell is this? You know? And it was Waylon Jennings' grandson, Wade Jennings. He's got a handsome. He sounds just like him, and a great guy too. You know, really? Yeah, well, Shooter's wailing son, but this was his grandson, Wade. And I didn't know he was putting me on the phone.
Okay. Okay.
That's just how it is, you know. I'm like, wait, hey, man, what's going on? You know? Let me know if you run into Hank the Third.
So what's the most obscure phone call you've gotten from being a musician?
Obscure?
Yeah, that you had to say, what the? Like somebody wanted you to do something, you know what I mean, musically, and then you were like, hey, I'm not doing that.
It wasn't a lash back, like it was being negative or insulting someone, but there was a manager that I worked with for a year. That managed me for a year as a solo artist, and he used to manage the rock band Kix.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he was putting together like a lineup of he wanted to do like a Duran Duran thing, like where everybody in the band is good looking and everybody plays pop. So there was a TV show out way back in the 90s called The Heights. And they had a song called How Do You Talk to an Angel? So I met with the guitar player, Sean, and we went up to Disneyland in Southern California just to get to know each other. And we just rode rides all day and hit it off. And then he brought in Johnny from the Vamps. And I forgot who the other guy was, but we wound up just jamming like Stone songs and stuff like that and Zep, you know, just some
rock songs. Right.
But nobody really wanted to conform and do that. You know, it's kind of like when you see Ministry when they first came out and it looks like Thompson Twins or Gaja Goo Goo.
Yeah.
And then later you go darker, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, but that was nothing, never anything that I wanted to pursue. And a lot of industry people, they look at the dollar sign of what they can put together, you know?
Right.
When me and Paula from Trivia were together, in a project in South Florida, we had Aerosmith consultants and stylists come in and, you know, with clothing and this and that and jewelry, whatever, you know. And they were looking at all of us across the table, and one girl looks at me and she says, when you walk into a room, she goes, I don't care about drums, the music, the clothes, whatever. She goes, every single place in the world, I want them to know who you are just from this. From your eyebrow to your jaw.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sitting here in like a Johnny Cash beanie with a dog collar on and patches this super joint ritual in GBH and DRI. And she's telling me to lose the logos and the jewelry and all this stuff because they see things from a different perspective.
Right.
Of, you know, when they first see you, what they see on stage and whatever, you know. So they had like their own plan of attack to do that. And I think the hardcore and the to me from back in the day, it kind of puts a little bit of the hair up on the back of your neck because you remember just Kmart tennis shoes, blue jeans, and a t-shirt that says Goodwill. You know? And don't get me wrong, I hate rock star shit, but I like the rock star aspect of getting fucking dressed up like soldiers and being like a team, like a unit, a gang, going on stage. I love that part of it too. But that was the first time I got input from Aerosmith people about what they seen in us and me and what I look like and whatever, you know.
Right. So I mean, is there a band that you don't care for?
That I don't care for?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Any over the years. I mean,
you mean just musically?
Yeah.
Oh god, I don't want to get in trouble. like radio
easy, from
my truck and I'm hitting scam. I'll just say this. When I immediately change it, if you don't get that, if I start hearing Jeremy Spoken, which is Pearl Jam, I hit it as quick as I can. Or the other song by Smashing Pumpkins that goes, despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage. I go like this. I cringe. But then again, it'll scan, and all of a sudden, it'll hit the Beastie Boy Sabotage, and I'm like, there you go. So it's not just about metal and rock, you know?
Right.
I don't like diluted stuff. I like gray
areas. Right.
You know? Like if I'm listening.
Right. Yeah, there's some songs that I don't care for. Yeah, there's some songs that I don't care for.
Like if I throw in hardcore, okay, I'll go right to the point. I'll throw in the Pro-Mags Age of Quarrel, as old as that album is.
Okay.
You know? Sometimes if I'm feeling a little black metal, then I'm just going in, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And then if I want real country music, Kashiko is going in, Wayne Jennings, or, you know, there you have it. And then if
right.
I'm feeling Midwestern right. and some kind of farming thing in my blood, Mellencamp's going in the duck. You know? I like the real McCoys.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm getting at, you know?
And right, right. There's not a lot of people out there to be able to do that anymore
because people are so quick to sell out. And the reason why they're so quick to sell out isn't just money. It's also taking the easy road out. I mean, they always say, if it was easy, everyone would do it. Well, now, and my fest shows proof of that, with 85% of the bands of the state I'm in are in cover tribute bands, karaoke, or DJs. I got 15% for all original talent in the entire state. So again, what I'm saying is, you can't tell me those people are going, it's going to be too much work to write that stuff. I'd rather just learn the song that I like, and then hopefully I get paid a bunch of money. And they are getting paid a bunch of money to do that, and I get it. But I do feel as an artist, you have a commitment to fans and the youth coming up to provide them with all original music to give them something to look up to, you know? I mean, if I was 16 right now, and I loved AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Van Halen, one and whatever, and they wrote that. Well, that's obviously how you become indulged in it and fixated on it and almost, you know, brainwashed by it. If all those bands, they told them, you know, the Beatles are huge. We need everyone to do Beatles tribute bands and cover bands, and none of those bands would exist. Eddie Van Halen wouldn't exist. John Bonham wouldn't exist. So I don't know what's going on right now, but it's
right.
Definitely putting a wrench in the crank. And this massive wall they're building with unoriginal artists, while they're putting it in, I'm pulling one out and bringing it down. And at least I'm trying to. You know, but like I said, 2 days are too much for me, so I just did one, and then it's back to focusing on what I'm currently with. But this is going to be really good. I mean, I picked the best of the best for Saturday in September. And it wasn't just in the area I'm in. It's South Florida. Daytona, Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa, St. Pete, Naples, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple out-of-staters as long as they have original music. And I was to the point where there was such a lack of that. I said to one band, I don't care if you're the new REM, and I got you going underneath a band that sounds like Suicidal Tendencies from the 90s. As long as it's all original and you want to showcase that, do it. I mean, because think about it. The person that listens to Van Halen might listen to Gene Autry. You don't know. But if you're not going to be able to get your music to them to see them live so they can expand those horizons, then you're right back to square one. You know? I mean, listen, I get calls every week. You want to be Alex Van Halen for a Van Halen tribute band? No, I appreciate the offer, but there's 2,500 Van Halen tribute bands. How do you feel about being Mars for 4 months? Oh, by the way, I'm in Orlando. I've got a Rob Zombie tribute band. Can you do that? And you know, I don't say no rudely, but I'm like, there's just so many.
Right. There's way too many tribute bands and cover bands and everything. And it's great. There's some of those guys that are really talented and bring justice to those songs. You know what I mean? But it's just, yeah, there's so
many. Mike Singer texted me the other night, and he'll do these short little things up. Don't quote me on this, but like, hey, I need lyrics. You know, I need a paragraph or something. I'm out of it. And I got like my back against the headboard and I'm writing. And all of a sudden it starts flowing. And all of a sudden I'm 2.5 pages in. And then I just freeze up and write up. Mm-hmm. And then I just hit send. And I'm like, how's that? And he's like, perfect. And the next day, he's got it.
Right.
You know, I enjoy doing that.
When I used to write songs, same way.
I'd rather do that. And
yeah.
You know, up and do an Iron Maiden song, and not that I have anything against Nick or Iron Maiden, but if I go up and do a roll of Power Slave, let's say a Maiden song, someone's gonna come up to me and say, you did that role just like Nick did. And of course I'm gonna say thank you, but I didn't write the role Nick wrote. I want my
sample
of what I wrote and what I'm doing. Because no matter what, any role or beat a drummer does, it has some kind of flavor to it, some kind of originality, like the beginning for Hot for Teacher, or God, it could be the opening role for Epidemic by Slayer, or hell, you know, Metal Church, A Ton of Bricks, you know, coming around the mountain on the toms. Brum, 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 brum. They're actually making the drums sing, is what they're doing. You know, that's where I'm at on things.
Right. You're always thinking like one step ahead, aren't you? I mean, you seem to be that type of guy.
Trust me, they tell me to calm down sometimes. I'm like, okay, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Well,
wants to know
the gameplay.
What do you got?
They're doing in the next year, you know?
Yeah. What are you doing in the next? Well, where do you see yourself next year? Let's put it that way.
Next week or next year?
Next year, this time. What do you think? Where do you see yourself at?
A personal or a musical level?
Both.
That depends on what's going to happen with the band, because you never know with these things, you know. But I do,
right.
Do know this. By next year, I won't be living in the same location. I'll be in a total different geographic location for sure. Because after so many decades where it feels like you're living out of a suitcase and a band houses and rooms or whatever, you got to have a place to call your roots or call home. And it's been a long, long time since I've been able to do that, you know. Just being on the move all the time. And then the second thing musically is, I mean, depending if you live on the outskirts of Nashville or New York or LA or whatever city, you know, as long as you can work with a click track, there's always work for you for any kind of music. If you master that track, if you want to be a session, a studio player, for me to go into a new project past this, after everything we've been through with this, I'm more hesitant than ever because of people's mindsets in 2020. Going into 2026, because the seriousness and the conviction I used to get out of people was almost brotherhood, you know, like signed in blood, win, lose, or draw, I'm with you, you know, no matter what happens. And that isn't around now more than ever. You know, I've never been a me person. I'll deliver for someone if I have to and do the damn best I can do. But I've been doing the same routine for so long to keep going on. Now I understand why drummers like, I don't know what names I want to use. Let's just use bands like, let's say Megadeth, Slayer, let's say AC/DC, who's been through some drummers, right? You basically know the routine. If you've been doing this as long as I have, if you look at one of those bands and go, listen, a call came in, right? You're going to know what to play, what kind of feel they want. You're going to know what they dress like. You're going to know where they live. You're going to know what they're tuned to, what their stage show is like. You're going to know everything about them. How often they tour, how many units, if you can even say that they press, how often they're on the radio, whatever. And then basically, once that's down and you're set into that, then you say, what's payroll? You know, is it weekly, monthly, yearly, you know? You can always, you know, take that route doing things like that. But usually the bigger the bands get, when they want a drummer, it's usually someone really close inside their organization that they trust. Because let's face it, I don't care how good you are, you don't want some maniac coming in and screwing things up for you. That wouldn't be good. You know? I mean, look at Kiss. I mean, you got a routine you got to do. I mean, Eric Singer, the drummer for Kiss, okay, phenomenal. Drummer, I knew he'd nail all the drum parts after coming out of Alice Cooper and whatnot. You got to get the makeup, you got to get the wardrobe down, you got to do that every single night, you know. And you have musicians nowadays that come into a band room and go, just to let you know, I'm not geared up in leather and I'm wearing board shorts and sandals. You're like, that ain't what we discussed, you know. So there's other things that can go haywire. You got to make sure someone's 1,000,000% on board with all these different flavors in the band, you know? I mean, I know drummers, and I'm not going to say any names, that have quit bands not once but multiple times. And I knew what they were making, and I was like, you are out of your mind. That paycheck, you can live anywhere in the world you want. All you got to do is do what you're told. And they quit.
That's just, yeah. I mean, I get it. It's their convictions. If that's what they believe in, and they don't want to put up with it. But if you're in it to survive, you kind of got to do what you got to do.
If that's all you got, you know? I mean, a lot of guys mm-hmm. get to the point where they're like, I don't want to say just the drug and alcohol thing, but they get suicidal because they don't know where to place themselves in society anymore. It's all they know. So they milk that cow until the last drop. And it's sad from another musician's perspective when you see someone doing that, because it's like somebody put this out of their misery. This is going on too far. It's just looking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask you something. Okay, go ahead.
Quick prime example. There was a big rock band that came out of Florida called Rock Gang, and I'm friends with the guys, you know? And they were like the Guns N' Roses mm-hmm. of Florida, and they were on MTV and everything, right? I was listening to an interview a few weeks ago with Kevin, the lead singer, and they all wanted to come back and do a reunion gig, and the band's still up, you know? And I started laughing as I was listening to him. He goes, I'm not coming out in my 60s in pink spandex singing Too Old for School. Okay?
Right.
You know, people don't get it. I'm like, no, but the cool man, that'd be awesome. And he's like, not happening.
Right. So let me ask you something serious on that note. You were talking about some musicians who that's all they know, and that's, you know, they can't handle the regular society aspect. How many times did you run into somebody that was actually like that? And did you help that person?
I've lost over 10 friends, musicians, and bands to suicide that were in their late 20s. Literally, like, we can't.
Yeah,
I'm not going to mention
that's all. That's
the names or bands, but things are crapping out and they're
right.
Not vibing on stuff, it ain't going their way, and then they wind up in jail or on drugs or whatever, and then they wind up getting someone pregnant, and that goes to shit, and then they lose their place, the car breaks down, that sounds like a bad country song, right? And then they're sitting in the dark mm-hmm. with their rig and their instrument, whatever, and can't function, and they're like, well, I gave it everything she's got, that's all there is in life. And I've had talks with guys before, musicians, that I knew it was heading that direction, and I would say to them, you don't know what's around the corner, man. You don't know what's going to happen next week. I mean, same thing with me. I'd be like, there'd be a gig, and I'm like, oh, man, they took him instead of me, shit, you know? And also the next week, someone calls that I didn't expect a call that's bigger. So you never know, you know? But I mean,
right.
When people get that down where they think it's the end of the world, you know, it isn't.
Right. I've got friends, I know people that have gone through that whole aspect of wanting to give up, and, you know, and I just, man, I always tell them, I'm like, man, if you got a heartbeat, you got a purpose, you know, I just try to install in them some type of.
I was with a singer in Los Angeles.
And
I
guess, in him.
I'm not going to say any names. He was 24 and I was 21. And he was a phenomenal singer, phenomenal showman. He was rated like the best looking guy in Los Angeles at the mm-hmm. time for rock music. I mean, the guy you wanted. So he mm-hmm. started jamming and whatnot. He started going through a split up. You know, somebody was screwing around on somebody or whatever. And he'd come over to my apartment in L.A. and he'd go right towards the top of the fridge, and I have a bottle of Jack or whatever, and he go, do you mind? And he'd do half of it. And I go, what's going on with you? You know, this is going to get better or whatever. Is it that bad? And be like, listen, she left. The band's in half. Finally got you. I'm getting kicked out. Then he starts giving me stuff, like throw rugs and his personal belongings. And someone calls me.
Yeah, you know that sign.
A man calls me up. He goes, yep. Jace, you didn't see the warning signs? And I go, no. You know, he goes, when they're giving stuff away, and I thought nothing of it. So like 2 or 3 days later, I get a call from the LA County coroner. They go, listen, we got a body down here. Your phone number was the last phone number he had. Numerous tattoos, body jewelry, Are we on here? I go, just stop talking. I know what it is. He went in the bathroom and pop. 24. Had everything going for him.
What the fuck?
Musically, but personally, just couldn't keep it together. You know? It's happens too much.
That's,
you know, maybe
it's
maybe
sad and it's not.
Balance myself out. Maybe I balance myself out where I have enough going on in my life and other things that I do, where something goes down in flames or the ship sinks. I've always got something brewing. Always, not just musically, something else. Right. You know, you got to stay busy. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to sit there and dwell on it, and then cobwebs are going to ruin you. You don't want that.
Right. So switching roles a little bit here to be a little bit more positive, but talk a little bit about what you got coming up. Talk a little bit about what you got coming up and let people know where they can find you.
Okay, well, if you want to go on YouTube, you can go on Skin Harvest Official, and then now we got Skin Harvest Behind the Music, which has some other fun stuff besides music stuff, probably us bickering or doing goofy stuff or shooting guns or fishing or horses or whatever. That's two things for YouTube. There's no other platforms right now. There's stuff on all over YouTube, live and album-wise. Like I said, baby step in it. There's the Mooney Metal Fest on Saturday, September 27th. That's at 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. All the best of the best, all heavy hitters. Then before that, I jumped ahead too quick. There's two shows in Georgia, one in McDonough, one in Duluth, one at Motorheads, one at Sweetwaters. I always get pumped when I go to Georgia. I love it up there. There's those two. And I'm trying to do a drum clinic for Atlanta Drums up there while I'm there. And then after that, we're heading towards Tennessee to go towards the Appalachians to film the first music video. And then we're going to hit the brakes for a little bit and see where we're at from there. And by that time, we probably should have a headlining set done because all of our sets have been opening sets, usually not over 30, 35 minutes, depending on the bands. But I know everybody wanted to have enough to fill up an hour and a half, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I know certain bands that came out with an album and they never opened in their life. They went right from the bars and clubs and headlined immediately and then went from that to that and never stopped headlining. They would not open. Huh. I love opening because after I'm done, I can talk to people and get in their heads and find out what they liked, what they didn't like and whatnot. And the whole building isn't cleared out, you know.
Right.
Some people don't like to talk to people. I do.
Yeah, I do too. I like to talk to people. Well, we're at about our hour, so I want to thank you again. And dude, we could do this all day. And I really want to, you know, be able to continue this conversation if you want to ever come back again.
Sure.
You know, I'll have you on again.
Absolutely. What do you do next time? We'll do is next time. I mean, this is your call. Well, maybe dice up the interview. We'll put two of the new songs that haven't been released online, like the first album, and we'll play them in between our segments of talking, get some feedback from people if they want to write in.
Yeah.
Hey, that was great, but you know what? Don't give up your day job.
Right. No, it's not going to be like that, I guarantee you. No, but no, that sounds like a great plan. Yeah, we'll have to set that up, and I'm really looking forward to hearing some of this album. So, I'll be more than willing to incorporate in this in a show when you guys have it all done and get it out, or you know what you want to do on the show, then we'll set something up.
Yeah, the first
sounds good, like a good
part of this stuff. It's amazing if you have Reverb Nation. I don't know how that important that is to anybody, but the band always stays in the top five and bounces back from number one for Tampa, and then it stays in between like 55 and 57. Worldwide, it never moves. People just keep listening and listening and listening. But there hasn't been any worldwide tour, no distribution, no record label, no touring agency. So, you know.
Yeah.
But listen, you have to watch everything you do with a microscope now, because from day one, about getting screwed in the industry, from whatever powers that be, whatever position they hold, it hasn't happened to me once or twice. It's happened to me like 50 times.
Right.
I mean, I got two albums that almost went gold from when I was in high school. I never seen a dime. And that was me and the guy's kids' college fund. Record company went under, everyone died, manager died, all this and that. I'm getting gold disc sent to me from Europe. And I'm going, oh, this band's on five different labels now? And I'm like, well, since I don't get any money, can I have a copy of it?
Right.
So there's a reason why.
It's crazy.
The microscope's getting put on. It's been a while, you know, because listen.
Right.
Anybody, in all original band out touring, promoting the product, should at least be able to pay for a one-bedroom apartment, their power bill, maybe their car payment, their cable bill, and come home and not have everything shut off. You should be able to afford to do that. Guess what? You can, because if you see how much other money is going to other people's pockets, they're doing minimal and basically answering the phone and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, you turn lime green. Yeah. It's crazy.
Right.
You know?
That is crazy.
Anyways.
All right, everybody. I want to thank my guest again, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and this will be all over podcast land, so look for it probably later this evening or tomorrow. And so we'll basically set it up for another time with Jason Mooney.
Indeed.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Have a safe weekend, okay?
You do the same.